Good afternoon, everyone. I'm your host, Dwight Henry. This is Local Matters for a Friday. Very happy to have a friend of mine in the studio with me. And unless you have been under a rock or on another planet, you've heard this man's name a lot lately as it relates to his singing ability and his appearance and qualifying to be on the very popular television show, The Voice. Happy to have with me this afternoon on Local Matters, Jay Koo. Jay, good afternoon, sir.
Hey, good afternoon. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you. I know you have, as I said in the parking lot, a lot of pulls and tugs on you at this time in your life. And, you know, between here and Los Angeles and all the other exciting things going on, you've got a lot of people clamoring for your attention. But thank you for taking time.
No, I'm honored that you'd asked me to be a part of this.
We're going to do two shows. So you'll hear this first one, then one next week. But I want to talk about your voice experience. I mean, how exciting, how all that happened and the origin of it. But there's probably a lot of interesting things that I happen to know because we used to work together
yes,
a little
sir.
Bit about Jay Koo that folks don't know. And I want to walk through that a little bit. Can we do that?
Yes, sir, absolutely.
And, because you've been everywhere lately. I go to the Tech football game. You're doing the national anthem. You're doing
yes, sir.
Halftime. And I enjoyed the Red Solo experience where we saw you on TV. How weird was it watching yourself?
It's incredibly awkward seeing yourself on TV. Like, you don't realize how awkward it is. But it was kind of a surreal yeah. thing to see.
Yeah. But you were actually young Jay Koo. You were the son of missionaries.
Yes, sir.
Your mom and dad are missionaries. Talk about where, when, how you grew up, and how all that happened. So there's a very Christian spiritual side to you
yes,
that
sir.
Most folks don't know about.
Absolutely, yeah. So I like to tell people, you know, I'm very serious about my faith, and you know, the way I grew up, I was very fortunate. I'm one of nine kids.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so I'm one of nine kids.
Like,
I'm the second oldest. I'm the second oldest, and so I've got one older brother. And my parents, originally from South Texas, the Corpus Christi, Orange Grove, Texas area. And at some point, Dad, you know, got really involved in church, and then he felt called to be a pastor and then a missionary. And so we traveled around a lot. We lived in Oklahoma City while Dad went to Bible college and then moved back to Texas, Oklahoma Baptist College.
Okay.
And he got, you know, really good, you know, involved with missions and stuff there. And then we moved back to Texas. Then we ended up leaving that church and looking for another church for a period. And Dad had visited a Cornerstone Baptist Church out in Carthage, Tennessee.
Oh, yeah.
And Brother Ron Ralph and them. And yeah. we just felt called to go there. And so there wasn't nine kids at that time. There was, you know, I think there was only like five or six.
You took that verse about repopulating pretty seriously.
Absolutely,
didn't
absolutely.
You didn't have to do it by
yeah,
himself.
Exactly. Yeah. you know, mom and dad, you know, I rock and roll. But so we moved up here and we lived here almost a year before we moved over to Haiti. And we lived in Haiti for about 2 or 3 months, I think.
Now, how did you land in the Cookeville area from going to Bible school? Did you have roots here, or the?
No, sir. Well, back when Dad was on deputation, when we lived in Texas, they had visited Cornerstone Baptist,
yes.
and then
oh, okay.
at, and
on deputation,
on
visit,
deputation,
which is
yes,
basically
sir.
Raising the funds to do the mission work.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
And he and my mom, and of course all of us together, and of course Dad and my older brother traveled a lot together too. They traveled all over the U.S. and so they had been to Cornerstone before, and when we had left the church there in Texas, we ended up, you know, we were looking at some different churches to join and whatnot, and we just felt led to come to small old Carthage, Tennessee, out there in Smith County.
Wow.
Yes,
so that's
sir.
So that's you got to this neck of the woods.
Absolutely, absolutely. And so we moved over to Haiti, lived there for a little bit. And then one of my sisters is a type 1 diabetic, and she got really sick over in Haiti. And so we ended up moving over to the Dominican side to get her help and whatnot. And Dad ended up just feeling called to stay there in the Dominican, and so we ended up.
Now, Haiti, for folks who don't know geographically, and I'm a little bit geographically challenged myself.
Yes, sir.
Haiti and the Dominican Republic hook up. They're
yes, sir. They're on the same island of Hispaniola,
right.
is what it's called.
Okay.
And Haiti's on the western side, Dominican's on the eastern side. And so we mom and dad were church planting missionaries, and so we planted some churches down there, and lived.
So that's what they did in Haiti,
yes, sir.
Primarily the Dominican Republic.
Yes, sir. So we would start churches and then train up a national and turn the church over to them and then move on to the next area and try to help. And while we were there, we also helped with countless, you know, medical groups, construction groups, you know, church planting groups, youth groups, whatever.
Now, were you old enough to have your hands in all that? I know you've got some memories about that, obviously.
Yes, sir. At one point, you know, I when I was young, you know, we didn't go to any language school, so when we moved over there, we didn't speak a lick of Spanish. And so it was a learning experience, but we learned playing out in the streets with other kids and kind of picking it up here and there. But yeah, definitely as I got older, you know, we became translators essentially, and so medical groups would come down and we'd go travel around to them, and okay. we'd translate for people, translate for preachers and whatnot. So it was, I mean, a really cool way to grow up, and then the whole music thing played into
life. Yeah, I was going to ask. So your music experience started in church,
absolutely,
which was a lot of folks start that way.
Yes, Elvis. I mean, that's the first one that comes to my mind. Yeah, So Dad, you know, was adamant about, you know, me leading worship and getting involved that way, because I've always loved music. And so, that was kind of how I got into it and taught myself to play guitar at some point along the way. And I always tell people, you know, if you're from the Dominican and you were ever part of any of those churches at that time, I apologize, because me learning to play guitar and trying to sing and lead worship, it was brutal. But people were so nice to us down there. And, you know, I could have butchered a song and they would have said it was the most beautiful thing they've heard. So, but yeah, that's definitely how I got started in music.
Hey, we're glad you're with us. This is Local Matters for Friday afternoon. I'm your host, Dwight Henry. My guest in the studio today, you know him, if you didn't know him before, you know him from The Voice. We're going to talk about the experience during this show and next show we're going to air a week from today. So you learned your guitar, your music, in church, leading worship, and you never took a guitar lesson.
I
mean,
I did
you,
not.
At least not at that time.
Yeah, not at that time, no. You know, YouTube was kind of becoming popular at that time, and whenever we did have electricity, you know, I'd get on there and watch people.
You did have electricity.
Yeah, we didn't have electricity.
Let's catch that.
Okay. Yes, sir.
Now, I remember, and I don't want to get off on a rabbit trail, but my only, not like yours, not living there, I was on a cruise, and one stop was Dominican Republic. And I don't know why this is what I remember, but I got off that ship, and we stayed there 3 or 4 hours, and I remember some little kids coming up to me and speaking Spanish, and I didn't understand Spanish, and without me, I mean, I just stopped, and they stopped, had a little cloth, and they began to shine my shoes, and mm-hmm. and that's what they did for income, for money, for the mm-hmm. tourists that go, and I saw, of course, you see what the tourists see in a few hours, but you just knew that there was a lot of poverty there.
Absolutely.
Is that what you saw?
Yes, sir. No, and I mean, the, you know, shoe shiners, people that come up and clean your windshields, I mean, and they're so quick that they're already doing it before you even realize
happening. I didn't know what was happening.
Yeah,
I thought that was part of the cruise. Yeah,
absolutely. And a lot of those kids that do a lot of that stuff, that's the only income that their family's getting. And so, you know, at times it can be annoying and you're like, come on, you know, but then once you stop and think about it, you're like, well, man, this could be
a
meal
exactly
for somebody.
That's exactly what I thought. They did this because they had to do that.
Absolutely. And so it's, there's a ton of poverty. And cruise ships and stuff do a great job, you know, of showing the beauty of the country and stuff. And at Dominican and Haiti, it's beautiful. But they tend to leave out a lot of the poverty side of the island and stuff like that. And it's, you know, whether it's big cities or mountainsides or whatever, there's just a ton of poverty and a lot of need for a lot of things out there.
What a place in the world to minister and to plant churches, and that's what you spent. But I want to come back to this phrase you used. When electricity was it? You only had electricity part of the day. I mean, you know.
Yeah, there were times that we didn't have electricity for weeks. But where I told you my sister was a type 1 diabetic, obviously she had to have insulin, and so you know, we had to keep some kind of electricity. And so at one point we had a generator that we would turn on for a couple hours just to cool the refrigerator down so we could, you know, keep the insulin cool. And then we ended up at some point along the way buying a power inverter, which basically, you know, without getting too technical, it charges the batteries, all these batteries, while the power is on. And then as soon as the power cuts on, the inverter will switch over to battery power. And, you know, it can run basic necessities like a fan or a refrigerator or something like that, but you can't overload it because those batteries run out of juice eventually, and then you're stuck with nothing. And so when electricity was off, even though we had an inverter, we still kept everything off just because we had to make sure, you know, necessities were being kept cool.
Was it off somewhat every day?
Oh, every single day. Yes, sir.
And at one point you went 2 weeks without it.
Oh, yes, sir. There was, I mean, when we lived in Haiti, I can remember there was probably a solid month without electricity in Haiti. And of course, anytime, you know, with it being a third world country, it's hurricane season down there, and hurricanes wreck that island all the time.
We know about Haiti, yeah.
Absolutely. And so, and when natural disasters have happened down there, their infrastructure, you know, sometimes it's a little bit slower than what the U.S., you know, would, you know, because of the resources and stuff. And so it's harder to get to a lot of those places and then get stuff back on. So, I mean, sometimes when a hurricane would come through, you'd be out without power for a long, long time.
We're glad you're with us this afternoon. I'm your host, Dwight Henry. This is Local Matters. My guest today is Jake Hoot. We're back with more in just a moment.
What's so important about shopping with locally owned businesses?
When you shop local, your hard-earned dollars stay here in the community, helping to benefit your friends and neighbors, local schools, roads, and all aspects of community life.
But what happens to my money if I spend it online or at a national chain store?
In most cases, the profits go far away, out of state, corporate headquarters, or even overseas.
It doesn't take any extra effort to shop local. Office Mart on South Jefferson and Cookeville is your locally owned office furniture and supply store. For over 35 years, they've been proud to serve businesses in the Upper Cumberland with quality and value. You get real customer service, too. And unlike shopping online, you can actually see and try out the large inventory of office furniture in their showroom. And when it's delivered, it's not a box on your step. They're glad to install and set up everything. Office Mart. There's no other locally owned office store in the region. South Jefferson Avenue across from Hardee's. Shop local at Office Mart.
Glad you're back with us. Local Matters for Friday afternoon. I'm your host, Dwight Henry. We're talking with Jake Hoot. You may know him in lots of different areas of the life, specifically his appearances on the very popular TV show, television show, The Voice. We want to get into that some in today's show and some next week, but we're learning about Jake's background, a son of a missionary, Dominican Republic and Haiti. And so you're down there. Your parents are planting churches. You're in a Spanish-speaking country. You are going many periods of time without electricity.
Yes, sir.
And but you're enjoying life.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, absolutely enjoying life. I mean, you know, that's you had nothing really to compare to a little bit. But
yeah.
But it was where I guess the point I'm making is if a family, particularly if a family, know that they're in center of God's will, they're satisfied there. I'm not saying it's always easy, but they know that's where they're supposed to be. And I guess your family knew that, right?
Absolutely. I mean, we you know, mom and dad, you know, they, like I said, they did their best to raise us right. And, you know, and they knew, you know, they had peace that they were doing what God wanted them to do. And we all grew up, you know, seeing that peace and, you know, about being happy. I mean, like you said, you don't have anything else to compare it to. You know, we were all so young when we moved over there. And anytime you go, and I'm sure in India it was the same way, like you go down there and you see these kids that, I mean, barefoot, don't have any clothes, nothing, have dirt floors in their house, and they're some of the happiest people you ever meet.
Absolutely.
And I mean, I don't know if it's just material things can, you know, make you unhappy after a while or what it is, but I mean, they're some of the nicest people and the happiest that you'll ever, you know, you'll ever come in touch with. And I mean, it's just a really cool thing to experience.
I saw, Jake, you mentioned that. I saw while I was in India. So things come back to me now as you talk about your experience in Haiti and Dominican Republic. I saw, we were walking in one of the villages, so many experiences, but I saw this lady, dark skinned lady there in India, and she was sweeping, had this glowing smile on her face. She was sweeping literally her front yard, which was dirt.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she was sweeping the dust off just to give. But she looked like she, you know, you would have thought that she had not a problem in the world. She had a glowing smile. She was waving. She was smiling. Those are some of the most grateful, thankful people I've ever been around. And and they just by our standards, have so little.
No, it's, you know, and to them, it's everything. You know,
yeah.
I mean, to them, it's, you know, just the smallest things that, like I said, that we take for granted every day to them is, you know, monumental thing. Like, I know, have you ever seen the 5-gallon water jugs, you know, that the plastic ones or whatever, you know, you put in the water machines? Well, the caps of those, you know, you can peel the cap off and it looks, if you peel it off right, it looks like a mini Frisbee. And down in the Dominican, since, you know, you can't drink the tap water, you know, everybody, like, whether it's little markets or whatever, they all use these gallon jugs. Well, the kids would get those little Frisbees, which is just a piece of plastic, and that's what you play games with
Street.
And so, like, just, you know, because we had, you know, we'd go out and buy those big bottles of water every day or every other day, because 9 kids in the house, you know, a lot of water is being drunk. And so we'd go out, and then we'd take those little discs and take them out. And just a simple piece of plastic could make, you know, just the biggest smile, and everybody's having a great time. And so
we had in India, I don't want to reflect too much, but a fellow who'd been there before took several hundred pieces of chewing gum and put them in his pocket every day. And we'd go into these villages where some folks had never seen a Caucasian, a white person. And there would be a child or two behind us because they'd never seen a white person. And he'd hand a piece of gum out to them. And the next thing you know, there'll be 20 behind us. Wow. And you give them a piece of gum or an ink pen to one of those ministers, a pen that we got from a bank for free here in town. Mm-hmm. You think we'd give them the deed to the moon. I mean, it was something that it had this kind of this experience, Jake, and I want to get to this. And I want to come back to this is where your music experience started.
Absolutely.
Playing guitar, leading worship in a church. Do you remember the first time you ever stood up with a guitar and the church you're in, or one of the first times, and how you felt and what song you were singing?
I think it's one of those moments where it's so traumatic, like you try to block it out of your memory. I still am. I can't get up in front of a crowd and talk to save my life, but I was such a nervous person and so just, you know, and so I don't remember the first time, but I can remember the first couple times, and it was just, you know, because when you're learning to play guitar, you know, you're playing chords, and it takes you about...
And you taught yourself at that
age. I did, yes, sir. I loved it so much that,
no YouTube,
I mean,
no books,
no. I mean, you just watch other people play and stuff like that, and you kind of find out what works. By no means am I even a good guitar player now, but I can play enough to sing with it.
Hey, man, you're on the Voice. Come on.
Yeah, well, I mean, luckily it's not called the guitar player, you know, because, I mean, I'd be in trouble at that point. But, it was a great way to grow up. And, I mean, there's so many things that, you know, I applied all my life nowadays with my daughter and with, you know, my girlfriend and her daughter and my spiritual life and everything that I learned growing up down there with a great family.
You know, Jake, I had a pastor one time, to use a phrase that has stuck with me throughout the years, and I look back over my life, and it applies so much. And this phrase was unconscious preparation. Unconscious preparation. And he said, I found in my life that what I was dealing with and going through and experiencing and making contribution is that I was actually being unconsciously prepared for what was next.
Absolutely.
I didn't know that. You had no idea that what you were learning and doing there in Nicaragua and the Dominican Republic, you were being unconsciously prepared for what you, I mean, did you get that saying? You look back.
Absolutely,
over,
yeah.
And those chords you were learning, you learned to play, and you had no idea where you were going to be in life or what you're going to be doing. But my sense is you were being unconsciously prepared.
Absolutely.
For, because we serve an all-knowing God.
Absolutely.
And he knew you needed those experiences and needed that knowledge and skill and to do what you're doing now.
Absolutely. And I'm very thankful that it was unconscious, because, you know, if you had told me back then, hey, by the way, you're going to be playing guitar on a, you know, and singing on a national stage, like, I'd have probably either, you know, ran away or laughed at you or something. So, I mean, you know, I'm very grateful for all the unconsciously, you know, preparedness that God gets us ready for, and kind of,
yeah.
You know, people say, oh, you know, goes through another door or something, another path. And I believe that, you know, it's just, you know, I'm very grateful for the paths God's kind of taken me down through life that, you know, I don't think about those paths all the time, but there are definitely experiences and lessons I learned in every one of those instances that, you know, you just kind of, that makes you who you are.
Yeah, absolutely does. By the way, this is Local Matters for Friday afternoon. I'm your host, Dwight Henry. We're talking with friend Jake Hoot today about his life as a son of missionaries and growing up that way in the Dominican Republic and Haiti. And I want to talk about your recent, fairly recent, I think, mission trip to Nicaragua.
Yes, sir.
Talk about how that came about and what you experienced there and what were your takeaway from that. And when did that happen?
Absolutely. It happened about a year and a half ago. You know, it's something very near and dear to my heart, because I had moved back to the States, obviously, to play college football at Tech, and, you know, graduated from Tennessee Tech, got married, had a kid, was working here in the area. And then, you know, life and God has a way of, you know, like I said, leading you down a different path, and went through some stuff, and, you know, stuff that you never expect that you'd ever have to go through and you never want to. But it happened, and it tore me up for a long time. It just put me in a bad place. And in the job I work at, you know, in radio, you know,
yeah.
and you know, like, you have to put on this smile all the time and
be
this friendly person. And it's an incredibly hard thing to go through life trying to put on a smile when inside you're just hurting. And I never questioned God, the way things happen, but it was definitely one of those things that just it hurt me for a long time, because, you know, you try to raise your family in church and try to do the right thing, and like I said, God just has a way of taking you down a different path. And so it, you know, I was in a bad place, and a buddy of mine, Caleb Hodges, called me one day, and he said, "What are you doing in March?" And I said, "I don't know." And this was the year before. I said, "I don't know."
You're
he
like
goes,
"Me, you didn't want to do it for lunch."
Exactly.
You
know,
March?
Yeah, and I still don't remember what I had for lunch today. You know, but he said, "Well, if you're not doing anything, you're going with me on a missions trip to Nicaragua." And I said, And at that time, I think I was just so defeated in life. I just said, why not? Let's do it. Yeah. You know?
And this was what month? Several months before?
This was probably at least 5 or 6 months before.
Yeah.
And so I ended up flying down there with him. And honestly, I went down with the mindset of, I want to disconnect from life. I want to disconnect from here in the U.S.
What a great place to do it.
Absolutely. And so I said, I want to disconnect, and I want to try my best to be a blessing as much as I can. Like, what no matter what it is. At that time, obviously, I hadn't spoken Spanish in a hot minute, so I knew I was going to be rusty, but I said, you know, anything that they want. And it ended up being the biggest blessing to me. I mean, just getting down there and went down with a medical group that started pharmacies in all these remote villages. And the mission is called On Eagle's Wings. And some guys started, you know, going down there, two pharmacy students, and then taking medicine and stuff, and it just grew over the years, and they've both been super faithful to the point where now there's this huge complex down there where they feed over 12,000 kids a day. And they've got
in Nicaragua,
and they've got you know, pharmacies everywhere that they help with, and they've got churches, and they've got kids programs and stuff like that. And there's a guy down there named Oscar who runs it, and he's a local, and he grew up pretty rough and moved to the U.S. and stuff, and then moved back and decided that he wanted to help the country as much as he could. And he knew that growing up that he didn't have a whole lot of opportunity, you know, and so he fell in with bad crowds and stuff like that. And so he has, you know, started kids programs and started raising all these kids, you know, the right way to keep them out of those situations. And it's just blossomed to feeding kids to schools, to churches, to all this other kind of stuff. That's just, it's an incredible thing to see. And, you know, one of those paths that God allowed me to go down and see a lot of that. And so, they built
it. At a time in your life when you needed it.
And absolutely.
The timing was perfect in a sense, right?
Absolutely. And I tell people all the time, I think part of it was, you know, God reverting me back to the way I grew up.
There you go.
You know, you get so busy in life and so caught up in whatever's going on. Sometimes it's easy to forget where you come from, and sometimes it's easy to lose sight of, you know, the way things were when you were growing up and stuff like that. And I think it was a reality check and a wake-up call that God was like, hey, buddy, like, it's okay.
He might have been saying, too, that I'm still with you.
Absolutely.
You're not in this alone. I mean, the God's grace is an amazing thing. His ability working through us to help us do things we can't do on our own.
Every day.
It is especially helpful during those tough times that you're talking about to know that, hey, he'll never leave us or forsake us.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I don't think about preaching now. Yeah. I need it, though. No, but it's just, you know, I was very moved while I was down there, and I saw, you know, a lot of things that God kind of just, you know, tugged at my heart for. And so I came back, and they also build houses down there for, there's a place called Chinandega, which is called the dump. And it's literally this dump site for this big city. And there's people that go out there every day and pick through the garbage, the city's garbage and stuff, to feed their families.
Wow.
And so when we were out there, there was some kids picking up out of it's just this huge area where there's trash and it smells and it reeks. And there, you got these kids out there just covered in dirt that are picking up pieces of, you know, pizza crust or whatever, and just chewing on it. And you can tell it's days or weeks old, and they're just, you know, and that's what they've got to eat.
That's lunch.
Exactly.
Maybe their only meal.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, you've got families out there trying to find food for their kids and trying to find clothes and whatever else. And so, Oscar and a couple different people, they started this program out in that area where they built homes. And so I came back and I was, you know, ready to rock and roll, and I tried my best to help raise some money for one home down there, and I think it's around $5,000 that it takes to build a small home for a family, and so we were able to do that. And then the group just went back a month ago, and I was pretty bummed out that I couldn't go, but I was part of the show, and so I wasn't able to get away. But
hey, we got about a minute left in the show. We're going to pick this up next week. Talk about your prayer. I was over at the Red Cello event. You had some bracelets that you created. And I think $2 a piece, and all that's going to the Nicaragua mission.
Absolutely.
I got about five of them myself, by the way.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate
absolutely.
That.
Is there a way that they can reach out to you?
Yeah, absolutely. They can reach me on Facebook and Instagram. Obviously, right now, things are a little hectic, so if I don't get back to you, but Red Silo is going to be selling them, and I'm going to talk to a couple other local businesses that I'll be posting. But yeah, all the proceeds, every single cent that goes, that is bought or that's paid for these bracelets are all going to buy by a bus that will feed around 11,600 kids a day.
Wow.
And so I think they needed like 60 or 70 grand to buy this bus, and they told me about it, and you know, that was one of those moments where God was like, all right, buddy, like,
here we go.
You know,
and your name on Facebook?
Yes, sir. Just look up Jake Hoot or Jacob Hoot, either one, and just send me a message, and I'll do my best to get back and help out.
Woo, it's been fun.
Yes, sir.
We're
going to
do another one.
Awesome. Let's rock and roll.
All righty. Hey, thanks for being with us this afternoon. Thanks to my guest, Jake Hoot. We'll be talking with him again next week. You stay. Be sure to join us next Friday, same time, for Local Matters.